doors open, front and middle. I slid into the rear seat. Bobby Lee slid in front. The doors were shut, locked, and Nathaniel was pulling away from the curb when they poured over us. They swarmed the car, covering the windows. Nathaniel hit the gas and the Jeep roared forward. An arm smashed through the window beside me. The sound of breaking glass was everywhere. They were trying to hold on and get inside. I fired through my window into the man beyond, and he fell away. Bobby Lee was firing into the hyena man that was trying to crawl through the windshield. But there were at least three others smashing at the glass, trying to crawl through. I fired the Browning into the one on the opposite window from mine. It took four shots before he fell away. The Browning had to be close to empty, but I'd lost count. The last two were-hyenas were halfway through the windows. One of them spilled into the back of the Jeep. He launched himself at me, and I fired two more bullets almost point-blank into him. The gun clicked empty. The man fell, apparently dead, at my knees, because I was kneeling in the back of the Jeep, which meant that I'd crawled over the seat to meet his charge. I didn't remember doing it. The last one was in half-man form. He was having trouble tearing his way through the window. I think he'd caught something painful on the glass. I drew the blade that I wore down my back. My right knee was down, leg flat to the floorboard, my left raised on the ball of my foot. It was a swordsman's stance for when you couldn't stand, balanced. I struck in a blur of speed, feeling the strength in my body like nothing I'd ever felt before. He looked up at the last second, just before the blade bit into the side of his face and split his head open. Blood splattered on my arms, across my face. The body slumped forward, most of its lower parts still dangling out the window. The upper part of his head from just above the jaw was gone, spilling out onto the carpet, soaking into the leg of my jeans. I had a heartbeat to think, "Holy shit!" Then I heard the sounds on the roof. Bobby Lee said, "Persistent bastards." I didn't answer, just knelt by the wheel well opposite the bodies. Edward, assassin to the undead, and the only person I knew of with a higher kill count for monsters than me, had talked me into letting a friend of his remodel my Jeep. The wheel well held a secret compartment. Inside, there was an extra Browning high power, two extra clips, and a mini Uzi with a mushroom clip. The clip barely fit inside the compartment, but it nearly tripled the round capacity, so it was worth the tight fit. Claws ripped through the roof of the Jeep and started peeling it back like opening a tin can. I threw myself onto my back and fired up into the roof. Animal howls. One body fell past the windows, but the other one stayed on the roof, the half-animal arm shoved through the metal. I went to my knees, firing just in back of the arm. The hyena man rolled off the back of the Jeep and bounced in the road. The arm stayed in the hole in the roof, caught on the metal. When the ringing in my ears toned down enough for me to hear something besides the pounding of my own blood, I could hear Caleb saying, "Fuck, fuck, fuck," over and over. Gil was huddled beside him on the floorboard, screaming, a high, piteous sound, his hands over his ears, eyes closed. I leaned on the seat but didn't try to climb back over. My back was covered in blood and worse things from rolling around on the floor. I yelled, "Gil! Gil!" He just kept screaming. I tapped the top of his head with the gun barrel. That made him open his eyes. I pointed the gun at the ceiling while he stared at me. "Stop screaming!" He nodded, hands lowering slowly. He kept nodding over and over again. Caleb had stopped cursing under his breath. He was breathing so hard I thought he might hyperventilate, but I had other things to worry about.
"What kind of clip you got on that Uzi?"
Bobby Lee asked. "It's called a mushroom clip. It about triples the ammo capacity." He shook his head.
"Damn, girl. Where have you been living that you need that kind of firepower?"
"Welcome to my life," I said. I looked down at Gil. "Next time I tell you to stay home, stay home."
"Yes, ma'am," he whispered.
"Slow it down, boy," Bobby Lee said. "We don't want to get picked up by the cops with bodies in the car."
"The damage may be a tip-off," I said. The arm dangling from the ceiling had changed back to human shape. It flopped bonelessly as Nathaniel turned a corner. I looked away from it and found the now human with his head bisected. His brains had leaked out in pieces. I was suddenly hot, dizzy. I couldn't remember what I'd done with the big blade. I must have dropped it, but I didn't remember doing it. I wedged myself into a corner, the Uzi raised to the ceiling, my body held on three sides by metal and the seat back. It was as close to being held as I could manage. I closed my eyes so I couldn't see what I'd done. But the smell was still there. Fresh blood, butchered meat, and that outhouse smell that let you know someone's bowels had let loose. I started to choke, and the Jeep pulled off the road. That made me look up, gave me something else to concentrate on. Nathaniel was pulling onto a gravel road in the middle of nowhere. There were trees, a floodplain, green grass, and beyond that, the shine of the river. It was a peaceful spot. He drove until we weren't easily visible from the road, then stopped. "What's going on?" I asked. Bobby Lee answered,
"I think if we drive around in traffic with legs sticking out, someone will notify the police."
I nodded. It was a good point. "I should have thought of it," I said.
"No, you've done your work for the day. Let me do the thinking till your head clears."
"My head's clear," I said. He climbed out of the car and spoke through one of the broken windows as he moved towards the legs.
"I know pangs of conscience when I see them, girl."
"Stop calling me girl." He grinned at me.
"Yes, ma'am."
He grabbed the legs and shoved the body through the glass. It landed with a thick sound on top of the first body. A sound came out of the body on the bottom. It might have just been air escaping. It happened sometimes. But then again. I was on my knees, Uzi pointed at the bodies.
Bobby Lee said, "Don't hit the gas tank, ma'am. We don't want to blow ourselves up."
He had his gun back out. I shifted my angle so that I'd shoot through the dark head that lay at the bottom of the pile. Did two bodies constitute a pile? Did it matter? Something brushed my hair and I jerked the gun up, only to find that I'd brushed the fingers on the arm hanging from the ceiling. It was coming loose, sliding lower on its own. Great. I pressed the barrel of the Uzi against the top of the head. "If you're alive, don't move. If you're dead, don't worry about it." Bobby Lee opened the back of the Jeep, his gun angled down for a shot at the body. "If I fire into the top of his head, the bullets may cut your legs out from under you." He moved off to one side, gun steady.
"My deepest apologies, ma'am. I know better than that."
I pressed the gun barrel more securely into the top of the head and began to reach slowly towards the neck that was just visible under the very dead top body.
"I'm alive!"
The voice made me jump and nearly made me squeeze the trigger.
"Shit,"
I said.
"Why don't you finish it?"
the man asked. His voice was pain-filled, but not thick. I'd missed heart and lungs. Careless of me. "Because that wasn't Narcissus's voice over the speaker system, and Ulysses said they had your lovers. That we didn't know what they'd do to your lovers if you guys failed them. Who is the guy over the speaker? Who is they? Where the fuck is Narcissus? Why would the werehyenas let anyone take them over like this?"
"You're not going to kill me?"
He made it a question. "You answer our questions, and I give you my word that we won't kill you."
"May I move?"
"If you can." He moved slowly, painfully onto his side. His hair was curly, dark, cut very short, skin pale. He turned until he could see my eyes, and the effort left him shaking, his lips blue, which made me think maybe we didn't have much time to ask our questions, that maybe we'd already killed him, just not fast enough. His eyes were a strange shade of gold.
"I'm Bacchus,"
he said in that pain-filled voice. "Nice to meet you. I'm Anita. That's Bobby Lee. Now start talking."
"Ask me anything."
I started asking. Bacchus started answering. He didn't die. By the time we crossed the bridge into Missouri, his lips were pink and healthy, and the dazed look had left his eyes. I was really going to have to start packing better ammo. 61. Bacchus actually didn't know all that much. Narcissus had introduced his new gentleman fair, Chimera, and they'd seemed to be having a wonderful time together. If not true love, then the rough trade they both wanted. Then Narcissus had gone into one of the rooms and not come back out. For 24 hours, the werehyenas had thought it was just sex, but after that, they stopped believing Chimera's assurances that Narcissus was all right. Ajax had managed to get inside, and that's when it went bad.
Ajax told us Narcissus was being tortured, really tortured.
Why didn't you rescue him? I asked.
Chimera came with his own bodyguards. They took...
Bacchus had to stop and fight to take a deep breath, as if something inside him was hurting.
You don't know what they've done to our people. You don't know what they've threatened to do if we fail them.
Tell us, then we'll know, I said.
Have you met Ajax?
He asked. I nodded.
They cut his arms and legs off and burned the ends of the wounds so he couldn't heal the damage. Chimera said they'd put him in a metal box and just get him out on special occasions.
Bacchus choked, and I wasn't sure if it was from injuries or horror.
Bobby Lee said, he's upset enough that I can't tell if he's lying or not, but I think he's telling the truth.
His voice was a little hoarse, as if he were seeing the images in his head that I was trying very hard not to imagine. I'd gotten better lately at simply refusing to let my imagination run away with me. Maybe it had something to do with being a sociopath. If so, let's hear it for dementia. I sat there in the Jeep, my mind carefully blank. No visuals. Bobby Lee looked ill. How many bodyguards does this Chimera have? I asked.
About 25 before you started killing them.
I thought there were like 500 of you guys. How could 25 men keep you down? Bacchus looked at me with stricken eyes.
If someone had your Ulfric, Richard, and was cutting pieces off of him, crippling him, wouldn't you do anything to save him?
I stayed quiet and thought about that one. I gave the only truthful answer that I could. I don't know. It would depend on what anything covered. I see your point, but why didn't you just rush them? Bacchus propped himself up against the side of the Jeep. Nathaniel took a corner a little fast, and Bacchus tried to grab something so he wouldn't slide. I gave him my hand, caught him, and he looked both grateful and uncertain. He kept hold of my hand and gave really good eye contact.
We didn't have an alpha. Ajax and Ulysses were the next in command, and once they started cutting up Ajax, Ulysses told us to do what they said.
He squeezed my hand, not too tight.
The rest of us aren't leaders, Anita. Our alphas were all telling us to cooperate with Chimera. We're followers. That's it. That's all. We need an alpha with a plan.
My eyes widened. What are you saying, Bacchus? He drew me close to him with our clasped hands.
There are still almost 150 able-bodied hyenas. God knows what they'll do to the prisoners now that we've failed them.
What do they want, Ms. Blake?
Bobby Lee asked.
Chimera wants Anita for his mate.
That raised my eyebrows. What are you talking about?
He's got a real hard-on where you're concerned. I don't know why.
I tried to draw my hand out of Bacchus's grip, but he kept me close. He's tried to kill me at least twice. That doesn't sound so friendly.
He wanted you dead. Now he doesn't. I don't know why. Chimera's crazy. He doesn't need a reason to change his mind.
He gazed up at me, still holding my hand.
Please help us.
Can you guarantee that the other hyenas will follow Ms. Blake?
Bobby Lee asked. Bacchus looked down. His grip loosened, then it tightened, and he looked up again.
I know that if we'd had any alphas that would have stood up for us all, we'd have taken these guys out by now. But Ulysses loves Ajax, really loves him. He didn't know what to do.
What about Narcissus? He's not still all mushy about Chimera, right? I said.
No, but the only time we've been allowed to see Narcissus, he was gagged.
Narcissus has a reputation, Bobby Lee said, of being a tough bastard. I don't think he would have rolled over for them.
Bacchus shrugged, and I finally freed my hand.
I don't know, the werehyena said, but he couldn't tell us to attack them. For all I know, Chimera may have taken his tongue. He did that to Dionysus, my lover.
He hugged himself, head down, eyes closed.
He gave me the tongue in a box wrapped with a ribbon.
I'd been given a box once with pieces of people I cared about in it. I'd killed the ones who'd hurt them. Killed them all. But the damage done to my friends had been permanent. Nothing I could do would fix it because they'd been human. They didn't grow back lost body parts. Bacchus kept his eyes closed, his face very still, as if he were holding himself tight, afraid to lose control. I didn't know what to say in the face of his pain. How did I go from trying to kill him to feeling bad for him? Maybe it was a girl thing. Or maybe I'd been over-socialized as a child. Whatever the reason, I found myself wanting to help him, but not wanting to risk any of my own people. Chris was dead on the floor of Narcissus in Chains. I hadn't known Chris long. His loss wasn't that great to me. It just wasn't. But if I went in there in force, I'd be risking people I would miss. Still. Can you draw a plan, a layout of the club? Mark where everybody is being held? He opened his eyes, his expression surprised, the tears he'd been holding back trailing down his cheeks, forgotten.
You'll help us?
I shrugged, uncomfortable at the frantic relief in his eyes. I'm not sure yet, but it doesn't hurt to find out what we'd be up against. Bacchus took my hand again, pressed it to his cheek. I thought at first it was going to be some kind of hyena greeting, but he laid a soft kiss on my hand and let me go.
Thank you.
Don't thank me yet, Bacchus. Don't thank me yet. I didn't say out loud that if the club looked too hard to take, like it would cost too many lives, I wouldn't do it. I kept it to myself, because he might lie, make it seem easier. The person he loved was being tortured. People will do a lot of things for the person they love, even stupid things. 62. Bobby Lee insisted on calling Raphael first thing. Nathaniel and Caleb helped me get Bacchus settled in the kitchen. He was still walking like things hurt. Gil had sat down at the end of the couch first thing, huddling. He'd been withdrawn since I told him to stop screaming. Normally, I'd have asked what was wrong, but screw it, I didn't have time to babysit him right now. The kitchen was dim and depressing with all the windows and the sliding glass door boarded over. We had to turn on all the lights. My sunny kitchen had been turned into a cave. An hour later, we had a fair map of the inside of the club. Bacchus knew the guard schedule for the hyenas, but not for Chimera's men. He did the best he could, but said,
Chimera changes his routine, sometimes every day, at least every 3 days. One day he kept changing his orders every hour or so. It was weird, weirder even than normal for Chimera. How unstable is he? Bobby Lee asked.
Bacchus actually seemed to think about that for a second or two.
I thought it was a rhetorical question. Maybe I was wrong.
Sometimes he seems fine. Sometimes he's so crazy it scares me. I think it even scares his own people.
Bacchus frowned, then said,
I heard them say things, like he literally was getting crazier and they were afraid of him too.
The doorbell rang. It made me jump. Nathaniel jumped off the kitchen counter where he'd been sitting.
I'll get it.
Check and see who it is first, I said. He looked back over his shoulder, the look on his face clearly saying that I was telling him something he already knew. After months of sharing room and board with me, he knew to check the door before he opened it.
You used to just open the door, I said.
I know better now,
he said, and vanished into the living room. He came back almost immediately.
It's the werewolf that was at Narcissus in Chains, the one called Zeke.
Nathaniel looked a little pale. Bobby Lee and I both had guns in our hands. I didn't really remember drawing mine. I was looking at the boarded-up windows. The wood was a little more protection than the glass had been, but we couldn't see through the wood either. The bad guys could sneak up on us better. Is he alone? I asked.
He's the only one standing on the porch, Nathaniel said. But that doesn't mean he's alone.
His eyes were a touch wide when he said,
I don't smell snakes or lions.
I could see the pulse in his neck jumping under his skin. It's going to be all right, Nathaniel, I said. He nodded, but the look on his face told me he wasn't convinced. Gil joined us in the kitchen.
What's happening?
Bad guys, I said.
More of them?
He said, voice plaintive.
You might have been safer on your own, Gil, I said.
He nodded.
I'm beginning to see that.
His eyes were so wide it looked painful. I had brought the mini Uzi in from the car and had reloaded it from the gun safe upstairs. I took it off the kitchen cabinet and debated between it and the Browning. The doorbell rang again. I didn't jump this time. I hung the Uzi over my shoulder by its strap and settled the Browning more comfortably in my hand. The Uzi was really an emergency weapon. The fact that I'd even thought about answering my door with it on my person was probably a bad sign. If I needed more than a 9mm to answer my own front door, I should just leave town. I peered out at the living room, but there was nothing to see but the closed front door. I was going to have to look out the side window to see what was waiting on the porch. I approached the door with the Browning in a two-handed grip, staying to one side of the door. I was ready in case they started shooting through the door. Of course, last time they'd shot through the windows, too, but the drapes were drawn, and it was the best I was going to be able to do as far as safety went. I knelt by the window, because most people shoot for the chest or head, and on my knees I'm a lot shorter. I eased the drape to one side, and something slapped against the glass. I jumped back, bringing the gun up, but nothing else happened. I had an image in my head of what it had been, and it hadn't been a gun. I thought it had been a picture. I eased the drape back and found myself staring at a Polaroid of a man chained to a wall. He was nude, covered in bloody scratches, blood covering most of his body, so it was hard to see at first exactly who it was. Then gradually my eyes made sense of it, and I realized it was Micah. I sat back abruptly on the floor, almost like I'd fallen. My hand dragged at the drape, keeping it open. The gun wasn't where it was supposed to be, but hovered in the air, half forgotten. A gag cut across that wide mouth, the delicate face covered in blood and swollen flesh. The long hair was mounded to one side, as if it were so sticky with blood that it no longer moved freely. His eyes were closed, and I wondered for a second that lasted forever if he was dead. But there was something about the way he hung in the chains that said alive. Even in a picture, there is a stillness to death that the live cannot mimic. Or maybe I'd just seen enough bodies to know. Bobby Lee was beside me.
What is it? What's wrong?
Then he saw the picture, and I heard his breath go in sharp.
That's your Nimiraj, isn't it?
I nodded because I still wasn't breathing, which made it hard to talk. I closed my eyes for a moment, took a deep, cleansing breath, and let it out slowly. It shook as it left my body. I cursed silently. Get a handle on it, Anita. You can do better than this.
What?
Bobby Lee asked. I realized I'd said the last aloud and shook my head, letting the drape fall back into place. I got to my feet. Let him in. Let's see what he's got to say. Bobby Lee was giving me a funny look.
You can't shoot him until after we know what's happening.
I nodded. I know. He touched my shoulder, turned me to look at him.
There is a look on your face, girl, that is as bleak as a winter's dawn. People kill other people while they're wearing that look. I don't want you to let your emotions get in the way of business.
Something that was almost a smile touched my lips. Don't worry, Bobby Lee. I won't let anything interfere with business. His hand dropped away slowly.
Girl, the look in your eyes now scares me.
Then don't look, I said. And don't call me girl. He nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
Now open the damn door and let's get this done. He didn't argue again. He just went for the door and let the big bad wolf inside. 63. When we opened the door, Zeke had a picture of Cherry in front of his chest. His first words were,
"Shoot me, and they both are worse than dead."
So he took a seat on my white couch, still breathing, though if he said the wrong thing, I was hoping to change that. "What do you want?" I asked.
"I was sent to fetch you for my master."
"Define fetch," I said. I was sitting on the low wood coffee table in front of him. Bobby Lee was standing in back of him with a gun pressed to his spine. At that range, with silver ammo, there wasn't an alpha in the world that would survive, Or at least none that I'd met, and I'd met a few.
He wants you to be his mate.
I shook my head. I heard that, but didn't he try twice to have you guys kill me? Zeke nodded.
Yes.
And he suddenly wants me to be his honey bun. Zeke nodded again. The gesture looked odd in the wolfman form, kind of like a golden retriever that was nodding sagely. Why the change of heart? I asked. The fact that I was asking calm questions while the Polaroids of Cherry and Micah sat beside me on the coffee table was a testament to both my patience and my lack of sanity. If I'd really been sane, I couldn't have been calm, but I'd hit that switch in my head that let me think when awful things were happening. The same switch that let me kill without much remorse. Being able to divorce myself from my emotions kept me from shooting pieces off Zeke's body until he told me where Micah and Cherry were. Besides, there was always the very real possibility that we could do it later. Talk reasonably first, torture only if you had to. Conservation of energy.
Chimera was told that you would be a panware like himself.
I raised eyebrows at that.
Panware? What the hell is that? A lycanthrope that can take more than one form,
Zeke said.
Not possible, I said.
Bacchus spoke from the kitchen doorway. He'd stayed as far away from Zeke as he could and remain in the room.
Chimera can take more than one form. I've seen it.
I looked back at Zeke.
Okay, fine. He's a panware. Why would someone tell him that I was one, too?
Before I answer that question, I have someone waiting in a nearby car. I would like her to come in and speak with you.
Who? For a wild moment, I thought he might mean Cherry, but he didn't.
Gina.
Micah's Gina? I asked. Zeke nodded. I looked behind him at Bobby Lee. Do we trust him to go back out and come back in without reinforcements? Bobby Lee shook his head. I shook my head, too. Sorry, Zeke, but we don't trust you.
Send Caleb, then.
He looked at the were-leopard, who had been very quiet throughout everything. Caleb was sitting in the far corner of the room, keeping away from Zeke, a lot like Bacchus, come to think of it. But then Gil was huddled in a different corner. I'd assumed I was surrounded by scaredy cats, hyenas, and foxes, but now... How did you know his name? I asked.
I know a lot of things about Caleb.
Explain, I said. The doorbell rang. I didn't jump this time. I was in that faraway place where I didn't get nerves, though the Browning was pointed at the door. Did that count as nerves? I went to the door, and Bobby Lee stayed with his gun pressed to Zeke's back.
Y'all better hope that that is someone friendly,
Bobby Lee drawled. Zeke's wide nose flared, scenting the wind.
It's Gina.
Call me paranoid, but I didn't trust him. I peeked out the window. This time there were no nasty surprises, just Gina standing on the small porch, a thick gray shawl hugged around her upper body. It was nearly 90 outside. What the hell was the shawl for? I let out a deep breath. The shawl was thick enough to hide all sorts of unpleasant surprises.
Damn. What's she got under the shawl?
I asked Zeke.
You might say a message from Chimera.
I glanced back at him. Talk like that isn't going to get the door opened. Zeke moved his shoulders, and Bobby Lee must have pressed the gun barrel deeper into his back because he stopped moving abruptly.
She's been tortured. Chimera sent her with me to show what will happen to your leopard if you don't come with me.
Why the shawl? I asked again. Zeke closed his eyes as if he wanted to look away but was afraid Bobby Lee would take it wrong.
It's to cover her, Anita, just to cover up her nakedness.
He sounded weary. Not just tired, but weary.
Please, let her inside. She's in a great deal of pain.
He smells like he's telling the truth,
Bobby Lee said. I sighed. That was probably as good an assurance as we were going to get. I opened the door, gun at the ready, staying out of the sight of anyone who might be watching from the yard. Because I was hiding behind the door, I didn't see Gina until she was well into the room. I closed the door behind her, and she jumped, then gasped, as if the sudden movement had hurt her badly. When she looked at me, it was all I could do to keep from gasping. I thought at first she had two black eyes, then realized it was just hollows under her eyes so deep they looked like bruises. Her skin was so pale with an undertone of gray, and I understood for the first time what they meant by ashen. She was ashen, as if her body was covered by something thinner, more delicate than skin. Her tall body was hunched in on itself, as if standing upright would hurt. Her lips were nearly bloodless, but it was her eyes that hurt me the most. They were filled with horror, as if she were still seeing whatever had been done to her, as if she might always see that awful thing over and over again. She spoke in a voice that was hollow, hopeless.
I got worried.
I didn't need to see what was under the shawl to believe that she'd been tortured. I didn't need to see anything but her face.
Can she sit down before she falls down? Zeke asked.
I nodded a little too rapidly, realizing that I had been staring. Please, sit down. Gina looked at Bobby Lee standing behind Zeke.
Have you told them?
I wanted you here to back up my story, Zeke said.
She nodded once, then moved to sit beside him on the couch. She sat close to him, almost touching. If he'd had anything to do with what had happened to her, I don't think she'd have been so cozy. In fact, she was so cozy that I was almost certain she knew Zeke. Knew him not just for Chimera's fun and games, but knew him before. How did one of Micah's cats end up friendly with Chimera's top goon? I asked, you two seem to know each other. All right, maybe that wasn't a question, but it would do. They exchanged a look, then Zeke turned to me. I wished that he was in human form. Even after years of dealing with lycanthropes, I still had trouble reading their expressions when they were in animal form. The fact that his eyes were human helped some, but you never realize how much of the expression isn't really the eyes, but the facial movements around the eyes, until you don't have them as clues.
Let me start by saying that Chimera wants you alive and well, and in his care in less than 2 hours, or he will start doing permanent damage to Micah and your leopard.
I felt my eyes go a little dead. We have a deadline then, I said. Talk faster.
Shortest version that I know is this. Chimera has always been a harsh master, but never sadistic until the last few weeks. He's unstable, and I believe he's going mad, and will kill us all if he remains in charge.
This is the short version?
Bobby Lee asked. I agree, I said. Speed it up.
I want you to help me stage a palace revolt, Ms. Blake. Is that quick enough for you?
Maybe that was a little too quick, I said. Why do you want to revolt, and why do you want my help?
I told you, I fear that Chimera will destroy us all. The only way to prevent that is to kill him.
Well, that was blunt. So why my help?
You have a certain reputation for deadly force.
You talk like an English professor, I said, or an expensive lawyer. Why not just kill him yourself?
The others that follow him fear him. They would not trust that I alone could guarantee his death.
And I can?
You and your people, yes.
My leopards are not going inside, Nathaniel said.
Anita.
I shook my head. No, I won't endanger the rest of you to save one of you.
What kind of pard would we be if we allowed our Nimir Ra to go into danger alone?
A pard that obeyed orders, I said. He leaned back against the wall, but there was an unusually stubborn set to his face that said maybe, just maybe, he'd been picking up more than just weapons skill from hanging around with me. Was stubbornness catching?
Not your leopards, but the wolves and the rats.
The rats aren't mine, and I'm not the wolves' Lupa anymore.
Raphael is already on his way here with some of our people,
Bobby Lee said. I frowned at him. Well, nice you mentioned that. He shrugged. If he was getting tired of pressing the gun into Zeke's back, it didn't show.
Raphael is my alpha, not you, ma'am.
I understand that, but if we're going to get along, you still need to keep me informed. I've had enough surprises for one day.
Amen to that, he said.
Where are Micah and Cherry being held? I asked. Zeke shook his great wolfish head.
No. Not until you agree to help us.
Chimera wanted to blackmail me into being his sweetie. You want to blackmail me into helping you kill him. I don't see much difference.
The only way to stop Chimera and those still loyal to him is their death. I propose that we pool our resources and accomplish that.
You talk awful pretty for a goon.
I am his goon because when he conquered my small pack of wolves, he forced me into this form and kept me in it. When he allowed me to try and change back, this was the best I could do.
I looked into those human eyes. Only your eyes, I said.
Only my eyes.
The eyes were usually one of the first things to go animal if you stayed in beast form too long at a time. His eyes being the only thing human was odd. But I didn't ask him to explain because we were eating up our time and I wanted Micah and Cherry back.
In this form, Zeke said, I can be nothing else but a goon, an enforcer. I cannot be human.
I didn't try to argue that he was human. I let it go. Let's cut to the chase. Bobby Lee, will Raphael help on this?
I think so. He's coming with enough soldiers to make a good show.
I looked at Bacchus. Will the werehyenas join forces with their, what, oppressors? Will you guys help Zeke and his people?
Zeke always tried to save us pain. He always spoke for moderation.
Bacchus nodded.
I think the others will agree to work with him, but whether they'll agree to let everyone live afterwards, that I can't promise.
If we help you destroy him, Zeke said, then you turn around and slaughter us. We have gained nothing.
In looking between Bacchus and Zeke, I'd glanced back over the photos. I'd spent the last few minutes not thinking about them. I'd managed to concentrate on other things, but it was as if that one glance had torn through all the barriers that usually kept me from doing stupid shit. I stood up, abruptly enough that everyone looked at me. Would you kill Zeke? I asked.
No, but Marco, he has to die,
Bacchus said. Why? I asked.
He and the Snake Men have to die,
Bacchus said.
Agreed, Zeke said.
Then he looked up at me.
And I think I know a way to have the wolves involved.
I'm listening.
Chimera is wolf, hyena, leopard, lion, bear, and snake.
He's behind the disappearances of the other alphas, I said. Zeke nodded. Are they alive?
The lion and the dog are. Chimera hasn't been able to force them to change form yet. He never kills anyone unless he can break them first.
Is Narcissus alive?
This from Bacchus.
Yes, Zeke said. Chimera has not been able to break him either.
How will any of this interest the wolves? I asked. I'd gone to stand on the other side of the kitchen doorway, opposite Bacchus. I couldn't see the pictures from there.
Chimera's never been able to find a dominant animal group that was weak enough to be taken over by outsiders before, until he heard of your wolf pack.
I stood up straighter, pushing away from the wall. What do you mean?
Jacob, Paris, and a few others are what's left of my pack. Chimera couldn't send me because my condition would raise questions.
Are you saying that as soon as Jacob becomes Ulfric, he turns the pack over to Chimera?
That was the plan,
Zeke said. And now? I asked.
Now either Jacob and the others agree to leave your pack where it is, or they die.
You'd kill what's left of your own pack just like that? I said.
They stopped being my pack a long time ago.
So let me get this straight, Bobby Lee said. You want the rats, the wolves, and the leopards to join forces with the hyenas, and whatever people of yours will join you, and destroy the rest.
Yes,
Zeke said.
And if we don't?
Bobby Lee asked.
You talk as if you have many choices here,
Zeke said.
You do not. Chimera will do worse than kill your leopards. What he has allowed done to the hyenas is beyond any civilized tolerance. His sanity is slipping away. And there are those among his people that will do terrible things without a master to tell them no.
It takes time to arrange an offensive like this,
Bobby Lee said. Zeke said,
I do not see a clock, but time is running out. Anita must be in Chimera's presence before 2 hours is over, or it will go badly for Micah and the leopard.
You keep saying Micah and the leopard, I said, like you know Micah. I had an awful thought, and I'd been slow not to think of it before. Jacob was supposed to get the wolves for Chimera, and Micah was supposed to get the leopards. I said it in an empty voice. My body felt empty, as if I were falling away inside myself, drowning in that great white static that allowed me to kill and not to think.
We thought their alpha was dead and it would be easy enough.
He looked at me.
We didn't know about you, or rather didn't understand what you were.
Gina spoke.
Once Micah met you, he knew it wouldn't work. He tried to get Chimera to leave you and yours alone, but when you went up against Jacob, you became too big a threat. Chimera ordered you killed. Micah didn't find out about the order until after everyone had left to come after you. He saved you.
I just looked at her. My mind was still trying to process the thought that Micah had lied to me the entire time I'd known him.
Micah told Chimera that you were going to be a panwearer like him, and he might never find another one like himself. That's why you can control the leopards and the wolves both.
I blinked at her.
I guess that's one theory.
My voice sounded distant even to me.
Don't you understand, Anita? I don't think Micah believed it, but it was all he could think of to keep you alive and him alive, and not to get the rest of us tortured.
She stood up, and pain tore across her face. Zeke steadied her, then she stood straight, and she let the shawl fall away. Burns traced her pale shoulders. The rest of her chest was bare and lovely and unharmed, but as she turned to show her back, Gil gasped. Her back was patterned with burns. No, not burns. Brands. Someone had branded her over and over again. The burns were fresh, some of them bloody raw, some with crisp, blackened skin, as if the pressure hadn't been even every time. Some of the marks were smeared around the edges, as if she'd moved, struggled. She turned back to face me, tears glittering in her eyes.
Every time Chimera sent Micah out, he had Violet or me with him. If Micah didn't do what he was told to do, then he'd hurt us.
She started walking towards me, hands holding her arms as if to hold herself steady, but every step hurt, and it showed in the flinching of her eyes.
What would you do to keep this from happening to Nathaniel?
I met her eyes, but it took effort.
I'd do a lot, but I wouldn't betray anyone.
The tears started slowly down her face, as if she were fighting not to cry.
He tortured Micah, because Micah refused to help lure you into the ambush. Chimera is going to kill him because he says that Micah is no longer his cat, but yours. That the wiles of a woman have won his loyalty.
She sobbed, and the movement must have hurt because she bent forward, body spasming. I caught her by the arms to keep her from falling.
Oh, God,
she whispered.
It hurts.
My throat was tight. I held her elbows until she could stand again.
I'm Chimera's message to you, Anita. He says he'll do this to your leopard if you don't come back with us.
You're not going back there, I said.
He still has Cherry and Micah. If I don't go back, he'll do this to her. I don't think she'd survive it.
I understood what Gina meant. Not Cherry's body, but her mind. She began to collapse towards the floor, slowly, me supporting her as gently as I could.
Micah knew what would happen to him when he refused to help trap you, but he still did it.
She was on her knees now, her hands gripping my arms tight, tight enough to hurt.
I would have lied and agreed to do anything to keep this from happening to me.
She sobbed again, and I held her arms to keep her from falling backwards onto her back on the floor. I held her while she shook in pain, and when she quieted, she said in a voice more tears than noise,
I would have betrayed anyone to stop him from hurting me. But he didn't want anything from me. Nothing I could say or do would stop it. Chimera promised Micah that only he would suffer for refusing. Then once he was chained up and couldn't get away, they brought me in and made him watch.
She looked at me, eyes wide, full of awful things.
Chimera would have made Cherry or me take animal form. He said he'd never had a female beast before.
That's what he calls those of us trapped between forms, Zeke said.
Gina's fingers dug into my arm just a little.
Micah took our place. He's alpha enough to have kept human form. He risked his human form for us. Merle was our Nimiraj, but he wouldn't risk his humanity for us. Micah took his place, our place. He's our Nimiraj because he loves us, all of us.
Micah offered to betray you to stop them from hurting me, but Chimera said he could smell that Micah was lying and that he would just get away and warn you. So he sent me with Zeke, because he trusts Zeke.
I looked at Zeke over her slowly collapsing form, trying to cradle her as she slid down and not hurt her, but everything seemed to hurt. She was making small mewling sounds by the time I helped her lower herself to the floor. There was something in Zeke's human eyes that didn't need facial expressions to interpret.
Chimera must be stopped, Zeke said softly. He must be stopped.
Yes, I said, still holding one of Gina's hands. Yes, he must be stopped.
Stopped? Hell,
Bobby Lee said.
We need to kill his ass.
I nodded. That too. 64. We made it back to the club with a little time to spare. The were-rats had arrived in force at my house, and I'd left Raphael in charge of the rescue, because that's what it would be. I was letting Zeke take me into the bad guy's lair unarmed. Zeke would be carrying my weapons, and theoretically he'd give them back to me if I needed them. Theoretically. But theory and practice aren't always the same thing. Zeke had tried to kill me once. Now I was supposed to trust him with my life. It seemed a bad idea, but I was still going to do it. With enough time, maybe we could have come up with a better plan, but we didn't have the time. Not if we hoped to save Cherry and Micah. It seemed like I'd spent most of the last 4 years arriving too late. Too late to save people. Too late to keep the monsters away. I was cleanup crew. Someone that came after the bodies were scattered around and mopped up the mess. I killed the monsters, but only after they'd done terrible things. Even now, Chimera had already butchered and tortured. But I could confess to myself, if to no one else, that part of me didn't give a damn about the others. I mean, I was sorry for Gina's pain, and Bacchus's lover, and Ajax getting chopped up, but they were abstract to me. Cherry and Micah were real. How very quickly Micah had become that real to me frightened me, but if I didn't look too closely at it, I could keep moving forward, could keep thinking clearly, could keep breathing normally. Thinking too much tended to make my thoughts jump around, my breath come a little too fast. The main part of the club had been dark and empty. The party, as they say, was upstairs. It was the room at the end of the big white hallway that we'd gone down to rescue Nathaniel and Gregory days ago. Chimera waited outside the door in his black hood, and his eye slits were unzipped so I could see pale gray eyes. He wore a rather ordinary-looking suit, complete with tightly knotted tie and white shirt that met oddly with the black leather of the hood. He had his hands behind him, leaning against his arms. He was trying for casual and failing. He was nervous, and I didn't need any lycanthrope powers to notice. Gina had needed help from two of the were-hyenas to make the steps. Zeke and I could have helped her, but he was pretending to guard me, and Gina had a note under her shawl to slip the hyenas. The note was from Bacchus, asking one of them to let him in the secret entrance. Apparently Chimera had never asked if there was a secret entrance to the club, so no one had told him. Chimera's eyes looked past me to her.
Gina,
he shook his head.
Take her away. Get her some medical care.
The two hyenas didn't argue, just turned and went back down the hallway. The snake man that had been with them stayed where he was, his black and green striped eyes never leaving Chimera's face. I would have said he stood at attention like a good soldier, but it was more than that. There was something on his face that went beyond that, as if standing there waiting for Chimera's orders was the most wonderful thing in the world. That look of patient adoration was creepy all on its own, and I knew why Bacchus had said the snakes had to die. Not because of what they'd done to the hyenas, not revenge, but because people who worship their kings as gods don't participate in palace revolts.
I wasn't sure you'd come, Miss Blake.
The voice was familiar, but I couldn't quite place from where. You didn't give me much choice.
And for that, I am sorry.
Sorry enough to let me take my leopards and go home? He almost smiled, but shook his head.
Micah is not your leopard. He's mine, Miss Blake.
Again, the voice rang familiar, but I couldn't place it. I shrugged. You got me down here with the understanding that both Cherry and Micah would be set free, unhurt. Sounds like they're both mine. He shook his head again.
To give up Micah, I would have to give up all my leopards, and I am not willing to do that.
Then you lied to get me down here.
No, Miss Blake.
He took his hands out from behind his back. He wore black leather gloves.
Join your pard to ours. Strengthen us.
I shook my head. I came down here to free my people, not to join your club. He looked at Zeke.
Didn't you explain to her what I wanted?
Zeke shifted beside me.
You told me that if she came down here unarmed, you would free Micah and the other were-leopard. That is all you told me.
Chimera frowned. Even through the hood, I could see it. He rubbed at his face behind the leather as if something hurt.
I know I told you that I wanted her to join us. You have said many things over the last few weeks,
Zeke said, voice very careful.
How long have you been the leopard's Nimir-Ra?
He asked. The voice was normal, ordinary, though his hands kept rubbing at his face. About a year.
Then you must see, as I do, that there needs to be a joining together of all the different forms. The only thing that has allowed us to move into every city and take over the smaller groups is the fact that the larger groups won't help them. They're like city neighbors who only call the police if it's their own apartment being robbed.
They let anyone who isn't like them go to hell. I agree that the lycanthrope community could use a little togetherness, but I'm not sure torture and blackmail is the way to get it done. He clamped his hands over his eyes, back bowing as if he were in pain. The snake man touched him with small, dark hands. Chimera shuddered, then raised up, the snake man still touching him, comforting him, I think. Chimera looked at me, eyes very direct. He grasped the leather hood and pulled it over his head. His dark hair stood on end, sweaty, needing to be combed. The touch of gray at the temples wasn't distinguished anymore. It looked more like mad scientist hair, as if he'd done something awful and it had changed colors overnight. I could see the scars at the side of his neck now. Orlando King, alias Chimera, looked down at me. I just gaped at him. I was too surprised for anything else.
I see that you didn't recognize me, Ms. Blake.
I shook my head and tried twice before I could say, I didn't expect to see you here. That sounded lame even to me, but what I meant was Orlando King, bounty hunter extraordinaire, should not have been the leader of a group of rogue shapeshifters. It wasn't doable somehow. That's why you knew about all the shapeshifters in town, because they came to you for help. He nodded.
I have been known since my accident to hunt down rogue lycanthropes and not inform the authorities. A few bad apples don't have to spoil the entire barrel.
I looked at him and tried to think. People thought your near-death experience had mellowed you, but you contracted lycanthropy. That's why you stopped being a bounty hunter.
It seemed wrong to hunt other unfortunates, he said. People who had less to do with the accident that made them what they were than I did. At least I was hunting the werewolf that almost killed me. I was trying to hurt it. Most people who survive an attack are just innocents.
I know that, I said, voice soft, because knowing Chimera was Orlando King didn't help solve the mystery for me. It deepened it. I was more confused than when I walked in the damn building.
But my change of heart, as you put it, came later. Wolf lycanthropy showed up in my bloodstream within 48 hours of my attack. I decided I would take out as many monsters as I could and let them take me out before the first full moon.
He stared past me, eyes distant with remembering.
I took the most dangerous jobs I could find, until I ended up trying to kill an entire tribe of were-snakes in the depths of the Amazon basin.
He looked at the small dark man still at his side.
I decided that dozens of any animal would surely kill me, and if not, then at the first full moon I would be in an area devoid of any human except the people I'd come to kill.
Logical, I guess, I said, because it seemed appropriate to say something. His gaze flicked to me.
I had planned my death, Miss Blake, but every animal I tried to kill just wasn't up to killing me. By the time I had my first full moon, I'd been infected by a great many forms of predatory lycanthropy. And on that first moon, I changed into what Abuta and his people are. Then a wolf, then a bear, then a leopard, then a lion, so forth and so on.
He was looking at Abuta, and his face held some of the religious fervor that the smaller man seemed to emanate.
They thought I was a god because I could take so many forms. They worshipped me, and they sent half their tribe to accompany me back to civilization.
He laughed then. It was abrupt and unpleasant. Something about that laugh raised the hairs on my arms.
You've killed all but three of them, Anita. I may call you Anita, mightn't I?
I nodded, almost afraid to speak, because emotions were chasing across King's face. Emotions that didn't match his calm words, as if he were feeling things that he wasn't aware of. It was like watching a badly dubbed film, except it was body actions that were out of step, not the words. A prickling rush of energy came off him like heat, and his eyes turned. One pale greenish leopard, one wolf amber. It wasn't just the colors of the irises that didn't match, it was the shape of the pupils. The entire set of each eye socket was slightly different from the other. I hadn't noticed the bone structure shifting. It had been that fast. A smile curled his lips. The entire expression of face, body, everything changed, and it wasn't shape-shifting. It was as if another person just settled into King's skin. Chimera's voice was slightly southern, thick and round-voweled. It was the voice I'd heard over the loudspeaker when they tried to ambush us in the club.
Poor Orlando. He just can't cope anymore. He hates what he's become.
I think I stopped breathing for a few heartbeats, which made my next breath harsh. I'd dealt with sociopaths, psychopaths, serial killers, crazies of all ilk, but this was my first multiple personality. Chimera jerked at the tight tie, tore it off, unbuttoned the collar, rotated his neck, and smiled.
There, that's much better, don't you agree?
My voice came out breathy. Always good to be comfortable. He stepped closer to me, and I backed up, bumping into Zeke. Chimera stepped in very close, almost touching, and sniffed just above the skin of my face. This close, his power rode over me like thousands of ants biting along my skin.
You smell of fear, Anita. I didn't think a little eye shift would spook you.
I licked my lips, staring into those mismatched eyes from inches away. The eyes don't bother me.
Then what does?
He asked, still hovering over me. I licked my lips again and didn't know what to say, or rather couldn't think of a safe thing to say. I thought of several smart-aleck remarks, but you should humor crazy people when you're at their mercy. It's a rule. Of course, I also had a rule never to put myself at the mercy of sadistic serial killers suffering from multiple personality disorder. I hoped we all lived to regret my breaking that rule. Truly insane people are often unpredictable and hard to negotiate with.
I'm waiting for an answer, he said in a sing-song voice.
I just couldn't think of a good lie, so I tried mild truth. The fact that I was talking to Orlando King, and now I'm not, but it's the same body talking at me. He laughed and stepped back. Then he went very still, as if he were listening to things I couldn't hear. Was it the rescue, this soon? It couldn't be. He looked down at me, smiling that unpleasant smile, and ran his hands down his own body.
I make better use of the body than Orlando does.
Okie dokie, things were not improving. I looked up at Zeke and tried to tell him with my eyes that he should have told me that Chimera was this crazy. Chimera grabbed my wrist, jerked me close. I'd been so busy trying to get eye contact with Zeke that I hadn't even seen it coming.
I was always inside Orlando. I was that part of him that allowed him to slaughter other human beings and feel nothing but hatred. He rarely took a shifter in animal form. It was safer in human form, and Orlando was a very big believer in safety, at least for himself.
He drew me against his body, using my wrist like a handle. He wasn't hurting me, but the strength in his grip was like a promise, a threat. He could have crushed my wrist, and we both knew it. King had a reputation for getting the job done.